Hey everyone, welcome back to Daily Newsletter Digest. It's Monday, May 11th, 2026, and wow, we have got a packed show today.
Yeah, I mean, the AI chip market is absolutely on fire. There's some serious geopolitical tension heating up, and we've got some really practical AI agent stuff that I think people building with these tools are going to want to hear.
Exactly. Plus some wild personal finance deals, a startup idea targeting fear of flying, and this one caught my eye. Meta is apparently tracking employees' keyboard strokes to train AI models, and people are not happy about it.
That's a lot. Let's dive in. Where do you want to start?
Let's kick off with markets, because the numbers here are just staggering. AI chip stocks are surging globally. Intel, remember they sold a 9.9% stake to the government last year when they were in serious financial trouble, is now up 239% year to date.
239% in less than 5 months?
Yep, and it gets better. SanDisk, the memory storage company, is up 558% year-to-date. Samsung crossed a $1 trillion market cap last Wednesday, and South Korea's KOSPI index, their composite stock index, is up 78% this year, compared to the S&P 500's 8% gain.
That's insane. So South Korea is basically riding the AI chip wave harder than anyone else right now.
Completely. They're now the seventh largest stock market in the world at $4.59 trillion, overtaking the UK and Canada since late April. But here's the concern. Analysts are saying the KOSPI is becoming a single industry index. Electric and electronic equipment makes up over half of it. And just Samsung and SK Hynix alone account for more than 40% of the entire index.
So if AI chips cool off, the whole market tanks.
Exactly. And some people are drawing parallels to the dot-com bubble. Last week was the best week for the PHLX semiconductor index since the week ending March 10th, 2000, which is not a great comparison.
Right, but the bulls would say these companies actually have earnings now, unlike the dot-com era. I saw Micron is expected to hit $77 billion in operating profit, and Samsung's first quarter profit was 8 times its entire 2025 annual profit.
That's true. It's not pure speculation like the late 90s. But the concentration risk is real. Speaking of which, Rocket Lab also had a huge week. Stock jumped over 34% on Friday after they beat earnings and announced their largest launch contract ever. They're up over 51% year to date now.
Space is having a moment too. Okay, so semiconductors are booming, but there's a supply chain angle here that's super interesting. I saw a deep dive on OSAT companies, the outsourced assembly and test firms, and the argument is they're the next hidden bottleneck in the AI chip supply chain.
Yeah, this was a really detailed piece. So the basic idea is that the market has already re-rated GPUs, memory, and foundries like TSMC, but OSAT companies, which handle the back-end packaging and testing, are still underappreciated. And the reason is that AI chips are way more complex now. NVIDIA's Blackwell chip, for example, has 2 compute dies and 8 HBM 3E memory stacks in a single package using TSMC's CoWoS-L technology.
And that requires foundry-grade clean rooms and sub-micron precision, right? It's not just traditional wire bonding anymore.
Exactly. And here's the kicker. TSMC's CoWoS capacity is fully booked. They're estimated to be at 75,000 to 80,000 wafers per month right now, expanding to 120,000 to 130,000 by the end of the year. But demand is so high that they're outsourcing some of this work to OSATs, and new lines take 18 to 24 months to build.
So there's a structural supply-demand imbalance, and the OSATs are picking up the overflow.
Right. And the other thing is that hyperscalers like NVIDIA, Google, and Amazon are deliberately diversifying away from 100% TSMC dependence. So OSATs are getting a dual tailwind, overflow from TSMC's capacity shortage, plus intentional supply chain risk management from customers.
Okay, but not all OSATs are created equal, right? The piece broke down margin profiles.
Yeah, this is where it gets really interesting. Low-margin assembly work generates about 10% margins, but high-margin test work, especially system-level test, or SLT, produces EBITDA margins above 40%. And as chiplet architectures multiply, the number of test points grows structurally, so the test side of the business is getting more valuable.
So the market hasn't fully priced in which OSATs are sitting at the highest value bottlenecks.
Exactly. The author segmented them into four types: advanced packaging, memory packaging, test specialized, and optical packaging, which is more future-looking, like co-packaged optics, which won't really hit volume production until 2028 or later.
Got it. So if you're looking at this space, you want to identify who's doing the high-margin test work and who's got the advanced packaging capabilities that can handle the overflow from TSMC.
Exactly. And the author's point is that this is the final unpriced bottleneck in the AI semiconductor value chain. All right, let's shift gears to AI agents, because there's some really practical stuff here that I think developers and operators need to hear.
Yeah, I saw a couple of pieces on this. One was from Ryan Stax's AI Operator Handbook about using expert context profiles to get better feedback from AI.
Right. So the problem he's addressing is super common. You ask ChatGPT or Claude for feedback on your copy or sales writing, and you get back something generic like, great hook, consider tightening the middle. Totally useless.
Yeah, because the model has no specific framework or worldview loaded. It's just giving you the average opinion of an average reader.
Exactly. So the fix is to load what he calls a context profile, basically a structured set of instructions that gives the model a specific expert's frameworks, vocabulary, and diagnostic questions. You paste it into a fresh chat before you ask your question.
And these aren't just generic, act like a copywriter prompts. He's very specific about what makes a legit profile.
Yeah, there are six required elements: the expert's central thesis, their diagnostic questions, their operating beliefs stated declaratively, their named frameworks with components broken out, their specific vocabulary, and, this is important, their known biases and limitations.
So it's not just pumping the model full of praise for Eugene Schwartz or David Ogilvy. It's actually loading the model with how they think and the specific questions they ask.
Right. So for example, Eugene Schwartz would flag whether your copy is written to the correct customer awareness stage. Robert Cialdini would identify missing influence levers. David Ogilvy would assess whether your headline is doing 80% of the work.
And Stax is offering a curated library of 15 expert profiles. He vetted them himself after sorting through a bunch of open source AI repos, most of which he says were AI-generated slop in a clean cover.
Yeah, the free version gives you the index with all 15 names and one-line use cases. Paid subscribers get the full JSON for each profile, with operating beliefs, vocabulary, limitations, and source citations traceable back to original books. It includes Gary Halbert on direct response, Donald Miller on StoryBrand, Clayton Christensen on jobs to be done, and a bunch of others.
I like that approach. It's very structured. Okay, so that's about getting better output from a single agent. But there's also this piece from Emerging AI about building your first AI agent from scratch, and it's really focused on the system design aspect.
Yeah, this is a great piece. The core argument is that AI agents are not chatbots. They're small working systems built around a model, not just prompts fed to one. And the foundational shift of 2026 is moving from prompt engineering to system design.
Right, and the author recommends a six-file folder structure: agents.md, task.md, memory.md, tools.md, evals.md, and run_log.md.
Exactly. Each file scaffolds a different part of what the agent needs: instructions, tasks, memory, tools, evaluation tests, and run logs. And the author draws on frameworks from both Anthropic and OpenAI to clarify what a true agent is versus a workflow.
Yeah, Anthropic's definition emphasizes dynamic decision-making. The agent chooses which tools and processes to use at runtime. Workflows, on the other hand, follow predetermined code paths.
Right. And this distinction matters because the term agent is wildly overused. Most automations labeled agents in 2026 are actually just workflows.
And OpenAI's recommendation is to start with a powerful model for accuracy before switching to cheaper alternatives. Accuracy first, cost optimization later.
Exactly. the author's big practical advice is to start with one narrow, boring, repeatable job. Don't try to build a general-purpose agent. The example given is a newsletter research agent. It reads 5 saved sources each morning, identifies 3 important updates, writes a structured brief, and waits for human approval before anything is published.
And the task.md template explicitly defines inputs, outputs, approval gates, and a measurable success criterion. In this case, saving 45 minutes of research.
Right, which guards against the most common failure mode. Vague goals producing wandering, unusable agent behavior. The full guide promises to cover memory, RAG integration, tool connection, eval testing, guardrails, multi-agent pitfalls, and the May 2026 recommended tech stack.
Okay, so that's building a single agent. But there's also this piece from Claude Cowork about parallel sessions and multi-agent workflows. And it's a little more cautionary.
Yeah, this one's really interesting. So Claude Code Desktop now supports parallel sessions with their own Git work trees, visual diff review, GitHub PR monitoring, scheduled tasks, and integrated work panes. Anthropic also has an experimental feature called Agent Teams, where one Claude session acts as an orchestrator, creating and assigning work to teammate sessions, each with its own context window.
That sounds amazing in theory, but the piece is basically a warning that polished summaries and green CI checks aren't sufficient evidence that work was done correctly.
Right, and there's empirical backing for this. A January 2026 paper called Cooper Bench found that collaborative coding agents achieved about 30% lower success rates working together than individually. The failure modes were things like vague inter-agent communication, unmet commitments, and misaligned assumptions about who handled which edge case.
So there's a curse of coordination, basically.
Exactly. And even Anthropic's own documentation acknowledges the coordination overhead. They recommend single sessions or sub-agents for sequential or tightly coupled work, and agent teams work best when tasks can operate independently.
So the author's solution is what they call a completion receipt prompt.
Yeah. After any serious Claude Code task, you require Claude to document the original task, every file or source touched, outputs created or changed, a concrete proof artifact, like a command output or test result, anything it couldn't verify, and the exact item a human should review before approving, merging, or deploying.
So Git work trees reduce file collision between parallel sessions, but they don't replace the review layer.
Exactly. The broader point is that parallel is not a quality signal. It's a management problem requiring explicit inspection protocols proportional to the number of agents involved.
That's a really important takeaway for anyone building production systems with these tools. All right, let's talk about some of the other AI news. There's this piece from TLDR about Meta tracking employees' keyboard inputs and mouse movements to train AI models.
Yeah, this is getting a lot of attention. So Meta monitors keyboard inputs and mouse movements on corporate laptops to generate training data, and employees have no opt-out option.
And people are not happy about it. The policy has generated anger internally, and contributed to a sentiment that Meta is no longer a place for a long career.
Right. Meta claims they have safeguards to protect sensitive content and that the data is used solely for AI training. But the lack of an opt-out is what's really bothering people. It illustrates a broader ethical challenge companies face as they race to collect proprietary behavioral data for AI development.
Yeah, and it's interesting because on the one hand, you've got this employee backlash. On the other hand, you've got this massive wealth creation happening at these AI companies. OpenAI recently allowed employees to sell up to $30 million worth of shares each.
$30 million per employee. That's, yeah.
And OpenAI and Anthropic are both gearing up for what could be some of the largest IPOs in history. This wealth concentration is already affecting San Francisco. Rental prices are rising, and there are concerns about a widening class divide.
It's a tale of two cities within the same industry. Some people are becoming incredibly wealthy, and others are frustrated by invasive workplace policies.
Speaking of practical AI use cases, Shopify has this internal AI agent called River that lives in company Slack. It can read and write code, run tests, open pull requests, and query data.
And the interesting part is that it only works publicly, never via DMs. So it operates entirely in public Slack channels,
which enables faster collective employee learning. Everyone can see how other people are using it, what questions they're asking, what prompts work well.
It's a smart design choice. Instead of siloing knowledge in private conversations, it compounds organizational knowledge. All right, let's shift to data science and infrastructure, because there's some really good stuff here.
Yeah, TLDR Data had a bunch of practical case studies. Wix ran 250 AI agent evaluations to figure out whether agent-optimized docs or prepackaged skills are better.
And the answer is, it's complicated. Agent-optimized docs proved to be a surprisingly robust foundation, but skills can outperform on token efficiency and latency when they're perfectly maintained and well-aligned with the task.
The caveat being perfectly maintained.
Right. Even small errors, staleness, or over-prescription in skills can dramatically raise costs and reduce agent adaptability. So it's a high-maintenance optimization.
And Wix's finding is that the tool layer is the most common failure point in AI agents, not the reasoning layer.
Exactly. So if you're building production AI agents, you need to focus on tool reliability. On the infrastructure side, Discord built something called Scylla Control Plane, SCP, in Rust, using declarative YAML workflows with idempotent tasks. It enables operations like shadow cluster spin-up in under 2 hours across its large Scylla DB fleet.
And NetEase Games had a really impressive optimization. They reduced LLM cold start times from 42 minutes to under 30 seconds.
Yeah, this was a progressive optimization. First, they got it down to 14 minutes using Alluxio caching. Then, with fully tuned fluid prefetching, they got it under 1 minute. And now they're under 30 seconds for serverless GPU auto-scaling.
That's huge for anyone running LLMs in serverless environments. Data pre-warming is critical.
Absolutely. And then there's this meta system called Autodata, which is an agentic system for synthetic dataset validation. It uses a two-loop generate critique refine workflow, and it improved validation pass rates from 12.8% to 42.4%.
So more than a 3x improvement, and the goal is to replace manual dataset curation by data scientists.
Right. It's another example of AI agents automating parts of the data science workflow. All right, let's talk about some of the other news. There's a startup idea from Half-Baked targeting fear of flying, and I thought this was actually pretty compelling.
Yeah, I saw that. So 25 million American adults have clinical aerophobia, and about 40% of all flyers experience anxiety, and the existing solutions are really outdated.
Right. There's SOAR, which is Captain Tom Bunn's program from the 1980s. It costs $695 to $1,995, and it's just audio-video content with no app, no AI, no live support.
And then you've got generic therapy platforms like BetterHelp at $200 to $400 a month, but they have no aerophobia specialization.
So the proposed startup is called Wingmate. It's a vertical mental health platform combining a structured CBT program, an AI chatbot for mid-flight anxiety, licensed aerophobia specialists, and community features. They've already built a live demo.
And the business model is a free tier, $1.199 a year core plan with the full CBT program plus the AI chatbot, and a $799 premium plan with matched licensed specialist sessions.
They're targeting customer acquisition costs of $40 to $80 and a blended average revenue per user of $240. And there's also a B2B angle, white label deals with airlines, estimated at $50,000 to $150,000 per year per carrier.
The go-to-market is interesting. They're targeting the r/fear-of-flying subreddit, which has 230 000+ members, aviation YouTube channels like Captain Joe with 1.7 million subscribers, and Mentor Pilot with 2 million, plus SEO capturing about 33,000 monthly US searches for fear-of-flying help.
And if they can land airline partnerships with carriers like JetBlue or Alaska, they see a path to $20 million plus ARR.
The newsletter rates it a go, citing genuine measurable pain with time-bound forcing functions. People have upcoming trips and proven willingness to pay.
Yeah, the key risks are episodic buying pressure on subscription lifetime value. People may cancel once their fear is resolved. And the need to build a network of 50-plus CBT-trained aerophobia specialists before scaling the premium tier.
But the mitigation for churn is a strong community layer, which they project could get them 60 to 70% annual renewal if executed well.
I think it's a solid idea. There's real pain, outdated incumbents, and a clear willingness to pay. All right, let's hit some of the personal finance deals quickly, because there are some good ones.
Yeah, Doctor of Credit had a bunch. ShopBack Shopping Portal is offering $15+ in sign-up bonuses, 1.5% cashback on Amazon, and a 10% bonus rate on giftcards.com, which is notably high.
10% cashback on giftcards.com is really good. You can stack that with other deals. 7-Eleven's 7Now app has a promo code 4MAYM that gives $10 off a $20 order.
And there are a bunch of regional bank and credit union account opening bonuses. Island Federal Credit Union is offering $600 for new checking accounts in Nassau and Suffolk counties in New York. First Commerce Bank is offering $500 with no direct deposit requirement in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, or Delaware.
No direct deposit requirement is rare. That lowers the barrier significantly. Santander is offering $500 for new business checking accounts in 9 states, and Camden National Bank is pairing a $300 checking bonus with a $200 savings bonus for Massachusetts, Maine, and New Hampshire residents.
And Grubhub has a Gold Days of Grubhub promotion running through the end of May, offering $50 off $150+ Instacart grocery orders every Saturday and Sunday.
That's a solid deal if you're already doing grocery delivery. All right, let's talk geopolitics, because there's some significant stuff happening this week.
Yeah, Trump rejected Iran's response to a US peace proposal. He posted on Truth Social that it was totally unacceptable in all caps.
Right. Iran had sent its proposal via Pakistani mediators. They demanded an end to sanctions, control of the Strait of Hormuz, war reparations, and release of frozen assets. Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian said, "We will never bow our heads before the enemy."
And this is significant because a recent poll shows the Iran war is as unpopular as the Iraq war at its peak.
Yeah, so there's domestic political pressure to end this, but the rejection suggests we're not close to a deal. Also, Trump is visiting Beijing this week for a 2-day summit with Xi Jinping on Thursday. It's his first trip since 2017.
Topics are expected to include the Iran war's economic ripple effects, tariffs, technology, Taiwan, and rare earth supplies. Boeing CEO Kelly Ortberg is among the US business leaders expected to attend.
And the Iran conflict is already disrupting supply chains. There's a Diet Coke shortage in India because of aluminum can supply disruptions tied to the Iran war and the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, which affects about 9% of global aluminum production.
Wait. There's a Diet Coke crisis in India?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Diet Coke is sold exclusively in cans in India, and it's particularly popular among the country's diabetic population, which is nearly 10% of adults according to the Indian Council of Medical Research as of 2023. Indian entrepreneurs are hosting Diet Coke-themed parties with cover charges and can raffles.
It's funny, but it also shows how supply chain disruptions can have these really unexpected consequences.
Exactly. All right, a couple other quick stories. About 1 in 4 Americans believe the shooting at the White House correspondents' dinner last month was staged, according to a new survey. There's a clear partisan divide on Trump assassination attempt conspiracy theories.
And 17 Americans from the hantavirus-hit Hondius cruise ship are being sent to a federal quarantine facility in Nebraska after the ship docked in Tenerife, Spain. One passenger has mild symptoms, and another has tested positive.
Yeah, that's an ongoing public health situation. Also, record heat is expected this week, temperatures topping 90 degrees Fahrenheit for 60 million people and 100 degrees for 13 million across 22 states, starting in the West. The Colorado River is also facing a crisis that experts say has rarely been more dire.
Climate stuff is just relentless. All right, let's wrap up with a couple quick market notes. Six Sigma Capital shared their weekly trading watch list, which had some big winners last week.
Yeah, Rocket Lab went from 78 to 105, Fly Leasing from 31 to 40, Oracle from 165 to 196, Cipher Mining from 17 to 22, MP Materials from 63 to 75, and Circle from 109 to 122. Double-digit percentage gains across most positions in a single week.
They're recommending stop losses at 1 ATR, prior support violation, like a horizontal level or key moving average or the daily low.
Right. And they've got 21 thematic stock setups for this week with ATRs and potential entry points. They're also emphasizing that traders should pre-set brokerage alerts at identified levels rather than reacting in real time.
Good advice. Fed chair nominee Kevin Warsh is expected to be confirmed by the full Senate this week, with Jerome Powell's term as chairman expiring Friday.
Yeah, so that's a significant transition. Also, AI chipmaker Cerebras plans to go public Thursday in what could be the biggest US IPO of the year.
That will be interesting to watch, especially given how hot AI chips are right now.
Absolutely. All right, let me just hit a couple quick tech and science items. The Washington Post published an interactive tool exposing the hidden system prompts that companies embed in AI chatbots like ChatGPT to steer their responses. Readers can experiment with different instructions on a live AI system.
That's cool. I'd like to play with that. Also, Japanese astronomers detected a thin atmosphere around a 300-mile-wide celestial body, about 3.5 billion miles from the Sun, which is unexpected because it doesn't have enough gravitational pull to retain an atmosphere under normal models.
Yeah, that's a head-scratcher. And there's emerging science on sperm-transmitted microRNA, suggesting environmental factors like stress and exercise experienced by fathers may influence offspring.
So it's not just maternal factors that matter. That could rebalance our understanding of parental biological contribution.
Exactly. All right, so what are you watching for this week?
I'm keeping an eye on the TrumpKey summit in Beijing, the Cerebras IPO, and honestly, the ongoing OSAT bottleneck situation. If that thesis plays out, there could be some interesting investment opportunities.
Yeah, I'm with you on the OSAT stuff. I'm also curious to see how the AI agent best practices evolve, especially around multi-agent coordination and inspection protocols. And I'll be watching the Fed chair confirmation and any movement on the Iran peace talks.
All right, that's it for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow with more from your newsletters.
See you then.